Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. It's a very unseasonably warm Monday at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick here. I'm not complaining. And I'm sure these ladies here today aren't complaining because it's great weather to go shopping at the Green Market. We've got Jean Hodesh, Publicity Coordinator, and June Russell. And I forget your long, convoluted title.
Yes. Keeps getting longer. I manage farm inspections and strategic development for Green Market.
You do a lot of stuff for this small, tight-knit organization. And this is formerly known as SCENIC, the City Council for the Environment of the City of New York, which didn't really roll off the tongue as much as the new name for it, which is Grow NYC. But you guys make the Green Market happen, which is pretty impressive because there's how many locations?
We had 53 markets this year.
Okay, and it's run by like you guys and like three other people.
We have a pretty amazing staff, actually, a number of seasonal market managers who come on starting in April and work their butts off through some crazy weather till right about between November and December. A bunch of markets start to close down for the winter, and then about 21 will stay open all year long.
21 stay open all year. Some people are like, yeah, well, I don't go shop in the winter because, well, now you know, 21.
Now you know.
Search it.
Some of my favorite things to shop for come up in the winter. We can talk about it later when you ask us what we like to cook.
Okay. Well, all right. I wanted to talk a little bit about the fundraiser you have coming up next week. Next week-ish. Okay. December 7th, that is.
Next Wednesday.
Yeah. Because we all know about the Hurricane Irene that swept through this summer. What's going on in the aftermath? How much has it affected the farms? Does it still affect it? What's happening? So you guys are having this fundraiser to support some farms that are greatly affected, and what is the extent of this damage?
So in September, which is typically the largest harvest month in the year.
Not spring. Huh.
No. September's really it, and unfortunately that's exactly when our region was hit really hard by not just Hurricane Irene, but then quickly after Tropical Storm Lee. So about 80% of the farmers in the Green Market program, we have about 230 family farms that participate and sell at our markets in the city. About 80% of those farms were devastated in some way by the hurricane, whether it was having a lot of crops washed out or if it was just, you know, devastation to the roads in their counties and the trucks couldn't make it into the city to sell, so they lost days at the market. So people were really hit hard, but then about 30 of our farmers were really had, you know, 80 to 100% of their crops totally lost.
Wow.
Catastrophic.
I was at the Green Market on Saturday in Grand Army Plaza, and I saw that a couple of, like, well, Kira Kenny's, like, wasn't there. Sadly, it's Evolutionary Organics, and Ray Bradbury had like onions and like that's it.
So those two farms were hit. They're probably some of the worst that were affected in the entire program. They're stands.
These are some of my favorite
shrunk
small farms.
Right down. Yeah,
they have the best turn.
Yeah, that a lot of the damage. It's similar to Katrina. The storm itself wasn't so bad. It was the failures of the infrastructure that happened later. Mm-hmm. So there was drastic flooding up the Wallkill, and the Wallkill actually flows north. So, and it travels through an area called the Black Dirt, which we have several dozen producers that come out of the Black Dirt. It's very productive farmland, very rich, and it flows through the Black Dirt and goes up to New Paltz, right where Ray and Kira and Hector Tejada are, and multiple other farmers. And dams broke in northern New Jersey, and the Wallkill flooded all the way up, and that was a big part of the devastation with the producers that we're dealing with. And then also up in Vermont, there was terrible flooding. And
Vermont too.
The whole, okay. And in our, it's been an outrageously bad year for our farmers. You know, starting with we do direct marketing. Our farmers do direct marketing, so we had a hard winter with lots of snow, so it was tough being at markets, and then we had a really wet spring.
Yeah.
A lot of people sustained damage and loss in the spring. Some people were flooded multiple times because they were hit in the spring and then again in the fall. Obviously, the storms were most dramatic, and the biggest losses came then, and folks were hit back-to-back within 10 days with flooding and seeing I have been out and seeing some of the damage, and to sort of comprehend the volume of water in these areas was humbling, to say the least. You see where the water lines are and the silt damage. And
can we grow like cranberries in these bogs now?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I mean, it's sort of one of the things that's on deck. It's like things are shifting. This is an impact of climate change, and I don't want to deal with that question.
Okay, all right. Yet, but I know that you've been involved with the farm relations for like over a decade now. So would you say that this is like a very bad, like one of the worst or the worst year ever? Mm-hmm. Ever. It's crazy.
That I've seen. I mean, there's folks with long
in this
memory.
Region, right, that serves New York City's food.
You were telling me about, just when we were driving over here, just about what you were seeing in those fields, just the images that stuck with you of the pumpkin sunk down.
Sure, yeah. In the black dirt, which is always a really dramatic area to go through anyway, because the soil is unbelievably jet black. So it's also very beautiful with the contrast of the produce that's growing and the rows and fields of green and purple and orange and any time of year. So I've made multiple trips out to keep trying to assess where people were at and also to check in with them. There's obviously a huge emotional impact for people as well, this is their livelihood, and most of them, this is also their home.
Were their homes flooded?
Some people, yes. And so then to wake up to it day after day, I mean, I definitely felt impacted seeing these things, and I can't imagine having to wake up and look out and see your hard work. Things were rotting. It smelled terrible.
Oh.
And again, in the black dirt, it's been an onion growing region for multiple generations, and they still grow a large amount of onions out there, and just fields and fields that were just swept away into these corners, and things were rotting. And I was telling Jean about a few images in particular that have stuck with me, and one was this field of pumpkins, and again, you have the the black dirt.
Those
everything
are big fruits.
Yeah, everything else has died off around it, and they're just sort of have collapsed from being waterlogged, and plus the rot that's starting to set in, and so you just have this field of like sunken down.
That must be surreal.
It was pretty, yes. And another one where there were cabbages, and normally this time of year they would be voluptuous and surrounded by leaves, and there were just like these washed out, bleached out heads of cabbage again, just like rows and rows, and sort of went on into the horizon because these fields are, these folks are managing a couple hundred acres. Yeah, but that's some idea of what it looks like. Again, that area was particularly hard hit, but this is many, many acres of just destroyed produce.
So, on top of that, as you were saying, this is the month. September is really the month when you're going to be able to start to make the money at the market to pay back everything that you put in to get to that point in the season. So when you're paying back the seed companies, when you're, you've paid your workers, but now you're going to actually start to make a profit, that would only come around about in September. So when everything gets washed out, there's not really an opportunity to make good
in
on your investment.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That was the other thing that was staggering when I would check in with our farmers and, try to talk some numbers with them and the amount of debt that they were in. And yes, that September is the time of year that they generally go from the red to the black. And so they're putting out money all the rest of the year. And usually from September until Christmas, that's when they make it back. So they not only don't have anything to sell, but they have this big bill for seeds that they put out. We're talking like tens of thousands of dollars. They spend a lot of money on seeds. We buy seed packets. Right? It's like 60 cents. No, these, $10,000 just to put in onions.
Oh, man.
And then there are inputs and fertilizer expenses that go into that as well. And so those bills don't go away. And that was pretty staggering to hear some of those numbers.
What's it do? I mean, and I had a Wenji Ying a couple of weeks ago, and she mentioned Rogosi's farm was doing like greenhouses and like growing lettuce or something because they were washed away.
Exactly. Well, like you were saying, I mean, you go out to the fields, and while it is totally devastating, nature does have a way of producing. So, you know, then things come around. So people started growing lots of radishes. Radishes come up pretty quickly. Yeah. Baby lettuce will come up quickly. You said 2 weeks later, there's the fennel. It's popping through. So being able to see that on the horizon, I think farmers are pretty resilient. Oh, so. It's sort of what we have learned again and again and again this fall.
So is that what some of these folks are now doing, or are they turning to other creative solutions?
Yeah, I mean, there is exactly that. There are some people who are out immediately and planting what they could with, you know, you're also up against frost, which will limit like their planning of, you know, they know that radishes will turn around in 3 weeks. And it is interesting. It will be interesting going forward to see, you know, when you have destruction, there's also creation and sort of opportunities that come in that people wouldn't have done, that they were pushed to do because of the storm. And some of that is really interesting in the hothouse. Several people are putting up hothouses that they haven't done before. And I'm interested in those things very much. And our markets can certainly use them. We still have a dearth of grains come February. I think if this helps to push folks into some new areas, and hopefully that will be productive. You know, I've heard stories over and over again that it's usually not one season that puts somebody under.
Okay.
It's multiple bad seasons. So we certainly want to do what we can to help people make the next steps and help them get some cash flow going and hope to get them on their feet so that there is a next season and hopefully there's a better season next year.
Cool. And Jean, were you going to mention, like, what are some other, like, solutions going on?
So people have been really creative. I mean, from the farmers themselves, Kira Kinney, there was a great article in the Times, actually, that talked just about this. But Kira set up, instead of a wedding registry online, she set up sort of a farm registry. So she could list all the things that she needed help with, like getting, you know, organic feed for her chickens. And then people could just pledge and say, okay, we'll get you that feed. That sounds great. So I think that that's really helped her through. And she has a very, very loyal following of customers. Right. And people are really wanting to know what they could do. And so kind of figuring out how to funnel all of that energy into the right place at the right moment was great. And then Ray Bradley had his annual farm party planned for just a couple weeks after the hurricane. And he just went ahead and had it. And it was apparently the biggest and best ever. And he had a t-shirt contest that coincided with the party, and now he's selling these great t-shirts that say fresh and dirty on them. They're really cute. I think you can buy them on the internet.
Did they tie-dye them with mud? No, just kidding.
Pre-worn, no. There's probably still a lot of mud. You could do that if you wanted to. So people have been really creative. There have been communities upstate that had big concerts where everyone in the town would come together and raise money that way. And then in the city, there have been a lot of things as well. So there was Dine Out Irene that a couple of food writers got together and organized, and over 100 restaurants around the city and upstate participated. So that raised a bunch of money. And then we have had collections online on our relief page at grownyc.org, which is still up if you'd like to contribute. And then we also just had collections at markets. And to date, we've raised over $60,000. So that's pretty significant. And it goes a long way for the farmers to know that people in the city care about them. They are watching. They are paying attention. And that they do want to give back. That even the goodwill gesture goes a long way. So next week, we're going to have sort of a final end of season bash. We thought it was a really tough season. Everyone could use a good excuse to get together and just kind of shake it off and hope that we'll have a better season next year. So on December 7th, we're getting together at the Bell House, and we're going to have some music by Naomi Shelton and the Gospel Queens, and then a really terrific Balkan band.
Whoa.
And everyone can come and dance. There'll be farmers. There'll be community members. There'll be some food.
There'll be some food, some drink.
Yeah.
And really how fun. Much is tickets?
Tickets are $40.
Mm-hmm.
And
all inclusive.
It's Cash Bar, but there's going to be a special on beer.
Drinks. Okay.
And then we're going to have past hors d'oeuvres. We're going to make, Roberta's actually is making beef stew for us, which will be really nice. And you can come and see everyone that you see at the market, talk to the farmers that are always too busy at the market to talk, maybe. And there's also going to be a silent auction of cookbooks. So those are coming in, some really great titles. So you can go to grownyc.org and look for the link to buy tickets.
And that should actually be really fun to see everyone in a totally different atmosphere of like, you know, instead of like rapidly, you know, dirt covered, you know, cash exchanging, just chilling out, have a drink.
Yeah.
So cool. I'm Definitely. Looking forward to that. December 2nd. Check out where 7th. To buy it.
7th. Next Wednesday.
December 7th.
Yeah.
and you know, check out Grow NYC for more info on that. And actually, the band, what is it called again?
It's Naomi Shelton and the Gospel Queens.
Oh, they sound so awesome. We're gonna play.
They're awesome. I have to give a shout out to the Daptone label. They're on Daptone.
Sweet. All right. So let's hear a little clip from that, and we'll be right back.
Oh, John. River, y'all, I am bound to cross.
Whoa, whoa, John,
whoa, John.
Down river.
Said I'm bound, yes, I
am bound to cross.
I said, John,
whoa, John, down river.
Said I'm bound, yes,
I am bound to cross.
I got one more, but she can't help me to cross.
Whoa, whoa, mother will be waiting.
She can't help me, no, no.
She can't help me to cross.
I said my mother,
mother will
gonna be waiting. She can't help me, no, no.
She can't help me to cross.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards and Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at surreyfarms.com or virginiatraditions.com.
We're back on Let's Eat In on Heritage, and we'll hear that nice message after the break. And sorry, we're here with Jean Hodesh and June Russell from The Green Market, Grow NYC. And we just had a delicious Thanksgiving weekend, and I can't imagine what you guys brought to the table from the bounty that we saw at the Green Market.
I have to say that shopping at Union Square the Wednesday before Thanksgiving is probably one of my favorite days of the entire year. It's so much fun. I love the rush of it, and I love all
people carrying turkeys.
Everyone's like, just so into it. It's like this great day, and a lot of the primary producers, sometimes they get busy during the season, you don't see them as often, or you get to their stand and they've got such a long line of customers, it's hard to get in and say hello. But that day before Thanksgiving, everyone shows up and is in such a good mood. I love going around and saying hi to everyone.
And what are you grabbing? Like bags of apples and potatoes? And
I let myself go totally crazy. I get everything that I feel like getting. So I got parsnips from Path and Roth Gardens. I got cranberries and apples from Breezy Hill Orchards. I got kale. The people that I was having Thanksgiving with requested that I bring kale salad. Mm-hmm. I got kale from Bill Maxwell.
You need a raw salad with the kale?
Yeah. I have this raw kale salad that I love to make. It's just kale with olive oil and some shaved Parmesan and lemon and garlic.
Do you use the regular like curly kale for that? Or do you have for...
Okay. Yeah, and just cut it really, really fine. And make sure that you kind of rub the olive oil into the leaves.
Yeah.
They get nice and dark. And it kind of softens it too.
Right, right.
So good. Anyway, but my big thing with Thanksgiving is that I have a terrible fear of pie crusts. that I almost have convinced myself I don't even really like to eat them because I have such a hard time making them. But this year I thought, this is a great opportunity to teach yourself a lesson. So I went to Cayuga Pure Organics and I got plenty of flour, and then I went to Flying Pigs and I got lard.
Did you use their half whole or?
Yeah, it was a.
I love that stuff.
It was half. I think it was.
Is that good for pies?
Well, okay. It was a little heavy, actually. They were out of their all-purpose, but okay. I worked with it. So I got lard for one crust and butter for another crust, and I made two. So I made a butter crust the night before to kind of practice my technique to make sure I didn't make any big slip-ups on the day of, you know? And then for the filling, I just made an onion pie. It was like the night before Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And I thought, onion pie is a really good thing to make at this time of year because there are plenty of onions around.
Yeah.
So that was great. It was a big hit. And then the next day, I made a lard crust and I made a big apple pie. And that was also really tasty.
Which crust was better?
I really love lard crusts.
Okay.
I think they're great. Don't be afraid of it. Just dive right in. It kind of the dough flakes up almost like a pastry. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really good stuff.
And June, you're nodding. You're a fan of leaf lard crust.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure. And I was just, of course, I'm thinking about the flour. So,
yes, you're the flour expert here at New York State Grain.
Yeah, one of the side things. We've been working with grain growers a lot. So, in general, yeah, their flour would be a little hard for a pastry. You want a soft flour for that, and generally that's pastry flour. When they would do an all-purpose, and that's what I was thinking about. I don't think they've had a pastry flour in
a while. I don't think so. Yeah. I haven't seen one.
So generally their flours are going to be harder and a higher protein content, which would be better for bread. Mm-hmm. But if you so I was interested in your pie crust.
How did it go?
They were sturdy crusts. They were definitely sturdy.
So, June, are you saying that the all-purpose from Cayuga is more higher protein count than regular pulpers?
It probably with theirs. Don't be careful what you ask me when it comes to the grains.
June's going to go on a long grain speech.
usually an all-purpose flour will be about 75% soft wheat and 25% hard wheat, and there's a few things that go in there. There's protein content, but there's also the gluten content, and you need less gluten for a pie crust and gluten for to make bread. Uh-oh. It's that thing that like becomes real stretchy when the bread starts to ferment and makes a nice round loaf of bread. So you don't need that in a pie crust.
Is soft wheat like just more fresher than hard wheat?
It's a variety.
Okay.
There are different varieties of grains, and that's one of the things that we've been exploring with our grain growers, and then also trying to work with our bakers as well to educate them and get these things into the vocabulary also.
Yeah.
But soft wheat is, it can grow both in the, grains will be planted in the fall to be harvested in the spring, which is really like into summer basically by the time it actually gets harvested. And then there's spring grains that get planted in the spring and they get harvested in August, September. So all those, they are different.
Oh my
gosh. Yeah, I know. It gets complicated.
Flour is flour.
Exactly. I'm
like, this is maybe a perfect segue. As people are thinking about, I mean, it's almost December now. People are going to be doing all kinds of baking in the next month.
Yeah,
cookies, pies, sort of breads, like fruitcake, people make that. What kinds of flour can you find at the market that are going to be good? Like you were just telling me, you
cookies.
Were trying to make a really good oatmeal cookie.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I made stuff at the for market. Thanksgiving is that I'm very excited about the groats and the oats that are
groats,
coming in.
Yeah.
But you can't, we're not getting them rolled because once you crack the hull on an oat, it will start to go rancid within a few days. And we don't have oat rolling facilities. Again, this is part of the work that we're doing with our grain growers.
There's no rolled oats at Cayuga.
Yeah, but what you need to do is go to Lehman's or whoever. You can order an oat roller, small tabletop, won't take much room in your apartment, and roll your own oats fresh.
No kidding.
Yes.
I'm going to roll my own oats.
There you go.
Yes, you do.
And so the oat groats, because I'm thinking like a rolled oat is like really white and chalky. Like when you eat it, it's like really dry. When I roll my own oats and I get a rolled oat, what's the difference?
It's going to be hard still. You're cracking that open. There's going to be a little bit of oils in them. You know, the grains all have a tiny little bit of fat, and that's the thing that becomes really unpredictable. So most of the stuff that's coming from the big ag players, all that's been removed because that little teeny bit of fat can go rancid. Oh. But that's also where your nutrition starts to come in and flavor and all those things.
Cool.
So, yeah. So you'll get like, I mean, then to make oats shelf stable, they have to be steamed. You know, basically you have to take all the life out of them to make them shelf stable.
But so who are you getting your oat groats from at the market?
Right now, that's Cayuga.
That's Cayuga. Mm-hmm. And then if somebody wanted to make,
say... They're the only ones that have them.
If someone wanted to make, say, Christmas cookies and they were at the market, what kind of flour would they want to look for?
You would still... you would want to get the AP from Cayuga and see if they have a pastry. Or another one of our partners is Daisy Flour, and they make beautiful pastry flour. And I know that that's available around town, and they've been working with some of our growers. They're not... themselves farming, which is why they don't come to Green Market, but they are involved in several of the grant projects that we're working on, because this whole equation is bigger than our single organization, so I can promote them as well.
And you're attacking it like grain by grain.
Yeah, somewhat. Like. Yeah, it's more, more diversity of products available, more things that our farmers can grow that we get to eat, which is always fun.
That's so cool about the oat groats. I do love their polenta, too. Oh, my gosh, that's some
amazing.
Good
really
polenta.
Good. Well, this gets back to what we were talking about. I mean, even though in the next month a number of our markets will start to close down for the end of kind of the long growing season, about... a little over 20 of them will stay open year-round. And if you think, people are always like, oh, there's nothing left at the market but apples and onions for months. But it is my favorite time to go there because you have to get so much more creative with what it is you want to cook. And so grains really will help you through the winter if you want to make, say, any sort of beef stew or a vegetarian stew. If you add grains to it, it becomes that much heartier and filling.
Like maybe farro or something? I don't know.
Any of that, yeah.
Emmer.
Okay.
Emmer farro. It's the same grain.
Yes. Oh.
We refer to it as emmer. Again, it gets more complicated. Mm. It was brought over by the Italians and went out to North Dakota, and it's been there for several generations. And so the seed stock that we've been working with in this area is emmer. And I don't know if the Italians have like
a
formal claim on farro, but it's something we've been trying to educate people as it is historically from the same
seed.
Grain. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Emmer farro is the same.
Okay.
We call it emmer. And which is available, it grows super well in this area, and I love it when people use it.
It's cool that they have recipes at the stand to hand out for some
absolutely.
Of these interesting grains. Wait, and beans, too.
Beans, absolutely. And then, so Cayuga will have recipes at their stand, and then also at any of the markets, our market info stations are always a great place to look for recipes, especially with what's available seasonally, and then oftentimes there's a cooking demonstration happening, and always if there's something that you don't know what it is and you want to learn how to cook it, you can ask the person selling you the food, and they'll give you an idea, and probably the person in line behind you will give you an idea of how to cook that too.
That's always fun.
It's really fun.
So you would you ask
the
them for an idea of the most fabulous, ideal date meal for two, because that's my favorite question I'm now asking you guys. What
really
is
depends on what time of year.
It could be any time of year. I love how you said that. It really depends on the time of the year.
You know, I have to say, I made
nothing
this
about the date. It just has to do with what the season is.
I made this onion pie on Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. I wasn't going on a date, but I was just going over and having sort of pre-Thanksgiving meal with two of my friends. And I don't know. I mean, I thought of onion pie because I had this pile of onions in my kitchen, but I've been talking about it ever since. And it's like this forgotten thing that's sort of a classic dish that people just don't think to make. Mm. And every time I say onion pie over the last 3 days, people go, oh, yeah. Onion pie. So you might, maybe you would make that on
onion
your date.
Pie.
I don't know.
I like that.
And it's a good filter, too. It's like, you know, you got to be with somebody who appreciates onions.
You've got to be with someone who appreciates onions. But it's basic.
I think it is a thing that you're most excited about. And I don't, I mean, I don't know.
So it's all about me, not the date. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, we happen to, this is the work that we do. And so it's hard to not be enthusiastic. I mean, we get access to an incredible, the food is great, and the stories behind them, and, you know, the exposure that we get. And so it's certainly fun to share that.
So what would your ideal date meal be? Any season imaginable?
Any season. Well, coming into winter, I get excited about making some of the winter dishes, like doing a real cassoulet. And that takes multiple steps. I mean, and that's, I don't know if that's a great date meal because it's pretty
beans.
Heavy. Yeah. And it's
good,
you know,
for the heart.
It's definitely a heavy meal, but it's, boy, I don't know.
Can we just talk about things we're excited to eat right now? I have a whole long list. First of all, it's bay scallop season. They're amazing.
Oh, yeah.
The teeny tiny little bay scallops that came into season just in the beginning of November. And they're so small and sweet and delicious. And they're a little more expensive than the regular scallops that you might find at the market. But totally worth it and something you should treat yourself
and
to.
Very
or
quick
a date
to
if
cook,
you're cooking
right?
for a date, yeah. And they cook really fast, so not a lot of steps. That's good. And then you cook a lot of goat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
And it's particularly, this is the right time of year to be eating goat.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, this is also, yeah, in the winter months, and you cook those cuts of meat that can be
tough.
They're tough and they're more rich, and you save the bones and use the bones for stock and mix all that stuff in with your beans and your grains that you're cooking. And it's really, it's good for you. It's part of, you know, I think that there is, I mean, it's been proven, like there's a synergy between what nature provides to our diet and what we need at that time of year, and those mm-hmm. are things that mm-hmm. that are actually good for you and keep you healthy. And you know, the marrow that's in the stock is good to keep you
I'll
well
have to
in the winter
try
months.
Around with goat some more. What's something that you might recommend for a beginner with goat?
Well, there's I made goat meatballs recently. Which
wow,
is,
ground goat meatballs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a few producers bringing in ground goat, but I sort of cross-referenced some recipes for kibbeh, which is a more traditional Middle Eastern meatball,
stew?
Basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you went to Sahadi's, they make their kibbeh. They sometimes put rice in it, sometimes pine nuts, and sometimes they'll coat it with a kind of a breading. But you don't have to. I made some for a party recently without any. There were breadcrumbs in the meatballs, but not. I didn't coat them with anything, and they were a big hit. And I also do. I love spraying kid goat for Easter dinner.
Oh,
and to
that's
just
a good
like
one.
Really slow cook
it. Roast it and just serve it with like maybe a pesto out of them.
Horseradish.
Horseradish.
Yep.
Perfect pairing for the goat. Thank you for that tip.
Sure, and that's just, we just do a real slow roast. I cover it with foil, give it a good salting, and let it go long and low.
Just like any other meat.
Yeah, and it just falls off the bone, and it's delicious.
Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be looking forward to checking out the goat there, and I'll be sure to ask you guys for more tips, or whoever's working at the market next time. So that's about all the time we have.
Great.
But we'll see you soon at the market.
And December 7th.
And at December 7th. The Bell House. Buy your tickets. See you next week.
Thanks for having us, Kathy.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming. She's still alive.